Edwards and Dick Bentley are back with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, the Polka Dots, and the BBC Review Orchestra, all inviting you to Take It From Here.
Bentley, why on earth are you dressed in that bizarre fashion? The white suit is all right, but I mean that dark blue shirt, the lemon tie and the slouch hat. It's a bit much.
Who do you think you're shoving about? Belt up or I lay about you with this length of lead piping.
Bentley, we're on the air. You're not at home now.
Oh. I'm sorry, Jimmy. I haven't recovered from seeing things ain't what they used to be.
Oh?
You know this musical about the Soho underworld? I was so impressed that I decided to open the Richard Bentley Theatre in 3 weeks' time with a similar show. Yeah. Oh, it's something unusual. Crooks, murderers, thugs, police, crime, brutality and violence.
People won't come out of their homes to see that. They get it every night on the television.
Jimmy, this is a musical. As a matter of fact, I've asked the producer to come along and see me.
I don't suppose that would be him over there, would it? That furtive brute skulking in the shadows, collecting the cigarette butts from the ashtrays. Hey, you, are you Bentley's producer?
Yes, I am. I'm Jane Underwood.
Oh, hello, dear. I didn't recognize you dressed in that greasy black sweater, the torn jacket, and those Wellington boots.
But you said dress formally.
Yes, of course. Tell me, why do you dress like that?
Oh, it's realism, that's why. I dress to express the revolt in my soul.
Nothing can express the revolt in mine.
Tell me, how is the production coming?
Oh, I found a title for it. Things is better than what they was.
Things? Don't you mean things?
No, things. It's realism. That's the way people really talk.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
You should know.
I do.
And tell me, what's your show about?
Well, it's all about thieves and thugs.
Oh. Jimmy, get this. As an added touch of realism, we're not using actors. We're using real criminals.
Oh,
oh yes, and Bentley, I fixed the cast. Our leading lady is signed. I managed to get Punch-Up Lil put on probation.
I think you're...
And then our juvenile lead's all right. Scarface Mulligan got time off for good behavior.
Oh, good.
Listen, have these people you're talking about had any experience?
But of course they have. No prison concert would be the same without Scarface Mulligan's lyrical rendition of laughing on the outside, crying on the inside.
The whole thing seems utterly ghastly to me.
You sound faintly skeptical about it. But really, you know, it is a splendid show. The curtain rises on a tiny group of frightened people starting back in horror.
You're looking at it from the actor's point of view, aren't you? What will the audience see?
It's a street in Soho. Then on walks the leading lady, followed by her probation officer, and she sings this song about her mother. I pine for that gray-haired old bird in cell block 2.
Yes, that's our theme song. You know, it should get to the top of the hit parade.
Yes, I can.
And then there's the final speech where her boyfriend comes on. That's the chief, Fug.
Fug.
He takes her in his arms and does this tender speech. I've got a script here. Would you like to read it, Bentley?
Oh, certainly.
Darling, don't you smudge my makeup.
That's a fine thing for a chief Fug to say.
You're reading the heroine's part.
Oh! Takes Lil in his arms and says tenderly, I've just come out of the nick. I've been doing bird for hanging one on a rotter.
If I thought you'd grasp, I'd give you a right hander across your boat race and flatten your eye, suppose.
And then she punches him one.
And he punches her back.
But she ducks and comes up with a right cross to the jaw, and the curtain falls on them having a right old ding-dong in the middle of the stage, with Punch-Up Lil knocking the living daylights out of Ventimore.
Could I have a part in this show?
Of course, Jimmy. Which part do you fancy?
I want to play Punch-Up Lil. Let's start now. Now we welcome the Polka Dots.
Love's an almanac. You must go on, you can't go back. For when you're in love, the one sure lesson you learn is simply love is just the point of no return. You
her arms, you think you're free. But honey needs a honeybee, and back you will fly. A kiss, your only concern. That's where you find you've reached the point of no return. You fight the feeling that keeps stealing up your spine, and you never admit that it was really quite divine. Down deep in your dreams you hear her voice echoing low. Why not give in? Let yourself go. The night goes by, and after all, you think you were a fool to fall. But long will the flame of love continue to burn, because you've gone beyond the point of no return. You fight the feeling that keeps stealing up your spine, and you never admit that it was really quite divine. Down deep in your dreams you hear her voice echoing low. Why not give in? Let yourself go. The night goes by, and after all, you think you were a fool to fall. But long will the flame of love continue to burn, because you've gone beyond the point of no return.
Now we present our newspaper of the air, the Sunday Times. As usual, first with the news, take this week's front page story.
Famous film star dies.
Miss Gloria LaVerne is now a blonde.
Full of interesting features, such as holiday guides.
Here is one way of giving yourself a really good break. Go skiing in Switzerland.
In the garden with compost.
Turning over the hard soil in your garden can be made easier with the help of an old rake. Why not ask Dick Bentley?
And so to our main feature. And this week we lift the curtain on a real-life drama set against the glossy background of Theaterland. Yes, we take you behind the glitter and glamour of the footlights and into the bitter, ruthless world known as... The grease-paint jungle.
The name is Merton Brooks. As an actor-producer, I have been responsible for such successful plays as The Humorous Shrimp, Epitaph for Matt Dillon, and perhaps my most famous, The Bathroom Tap, which of course ran for years. However, the story I have to tell concerns a brilliant and truly great actress. A sort of female me. It all started on the last night of our triumphant appearance in T. N. Timothy. After the show, there was naturally a party. Well, darling, tonight was the final curtain.
Yes, Merton. You and I, we've played 1,200 performances together. We shared those familiar lines, played those tender love scenes, and had those cozy little suppers in my dressing room. And now, it's over. Merton, I feel so, what's the word? Glad.
My dear, just think, we're both 3 years older now. Do you realize that makes me 29?
Oh, Merton, really, you're not 29.
Oh, I know, but I soon will be.
Hello, darlings. I say, who's coming on to my party? Absolutely everyone's going to be there. Sir John, Sir Larry, Sir Ralph, Sir Alec.
Oh, no, thanks, sweetie. I get so tired after those all-night parties.
Oh, well, we must be off anyway. Come on, let's fly away, Peter.
Coming, Paul.
Thank heavens they've gone.
Excuse me.
Oh, yes?
I've often seen your name in life. Aren't you Julia Arca?
The name is Julia Parker. Those beastly light bulbs are always bursting.
Terribly sorry. However, may I be permitted to say that it is indeed an honor to be standing close to someone so gifted, so glamorous, and so radiantly beautiful.
Well, thank you. I suppose you're quite...
Martin, I think he means me. You're very kind, Mr...
Courtney.
Oh, Courtney.
Clive Courtney. It's funny, Miss Parker, but seeing you here and now, and in that tight-fitting gown... It's hard to think of you as a straight actress.
You're most observant, young man.
Well, I do have eyes.
Well, I must confess this dress is rather, well, fetching.
Yes, Julia, perhaps you'd better go and fetch the rest of it. Look here, young man, what do you do?
I'm an actor, Mr. Brooks. Of course, I wouldn't presume to compare myself with you. I mean, I'm much younger.
Oh, so you act, Clive. Look, I'm having quite a crowd down to my place for the weekend.
Oh, yes.
But here's the address. It's a country mansion just past Bagshot. Oh. 40 acres, swimming pool, riding stables, nothing ostentatious. I'd love you to come.
Thank you very much, Miss Parker. I shall look forward to it.
Well, goodbye.
Julia, I've seen that look 1,000 times before. Now, be careful.
But he interests me.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Well, I'm afraid I must dash.
Bye, Julia.
See you at the weekend.
Oh, what a lovely place this is, Julia. What a novel idea. All the garden furniture made out of beer barrels.
Yes, I'm so glad you like my bittersweet. I say, have you seen Clive anywhere?
Yes, there he is, just coming out of the pool.
Oh, yes, so he is. Oh, Clive, yoo-hoo. Hello, darling. Had a good swim?
Oh, rather, yes, yes. The water in the pool is just the way I like it, full of girls.
Oh, you naughty boy. You are just a boy, aren't you? Come here, Clive. Kiss me.
Julia, please. Please don't laugh.
I can't help it, Clive. Your moustache tickles.
Oh, Julia, it's no good. I can't keep up this pretense. I have something to confess.
Oh, it's not a false moustache.
Oh, no, no, no. Very much attached to it. No, no, no. Well, the truth is, last night, those things I said, it was all acting.
Oh, Clive.
I'm afraid it's true, Julia. You see, I'd do anything to get into the theater. Anything. Julia, I've got to have a part in your new play.
But, Clive, I don't even know if you can act.
Well, about that last bit, I was doing me nut there.
Look, very well, I'll speak to Merton, but mind you, I can't...
Oh, there you are, Julia. Sorry to be late. I got caught by the press.
You shouldn't have put your trousers on while they were still in it.
Merton, Clive and I have been discussing the play here by the pool. Could you cast him in it?
With pleasure. Which is the deep end?
Mr. Brooks, there's a part in this play that could have been written for me. You've just got to let me play Manville. I know I can do it. I'll work hard. Believe me, I'll work hard. You must give me a chance to play Manville.
But this part calls for great experience. I've no idea what you can do.
I have.
Mr. Brooks, I'll do something for you now. Just listen to this, if you will. An excerpt from Pygmalion.
Oh, all right. Off you go.
Oh, I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are going to ring.
Enough. Thank you.
Look, Merton, as a favor to me, let him play Manville, please.
Well, all right, but it'll mean extra rehearsals. The Manville character must be absolutely right.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
So we went into rehearsal. Weeks of hard work, out-of-town tryouts, and then opening night. Backstage, there was the usual air of tense excitement. Clive, are you terribly nervous about going on tonight?
No, not really.
Then what are you doing in the ladies' cloakroom?
Get us on stage, please. Here, Miss Potter. Where's Mr. Brooks?
Coming. Here I am.
Oh, good luck, Merton.
And you. Oh, dear, I'm awfully worried about Clive. All through the tour, he's been forgetting his parts. I told you we should never have entrusted him with the Manville part.
Oh, don't worry. He'll be all right.
Stand by. Curtain going up.
Oh, it's you, Simon. When did you get back?
This morning, Cynthia.
How nice to see you.
Don't lie to me. I know what's been going on behind my back.
I don't know what you mean, Simon.
It's Manville, isn't it? What's more, I happen to know he's coming here to see you tonight.
Simon, you're making a mistake.
So it's you, Manville.
Simon, no!
Oh! Oh, ah!
Week, Dick Bentley and June Whitfield open the Take It From Here songbook at random and in perfect harmony say, "Swanderful."
Life has just begun. Jack has found his Jill.
Don't know what you've done, but I'm all a thrill.
It's wonderful. It's marvelous. You should care for me.
Oh, it's awful nice. And it's paradise. What I
so glamorous, you can't blame me for feeling amorous.
It's wonderful, marvelous
that you should care for me, my dear. It's folly flown the time.
From now on, my heart's working overtime. Oh, it's wonderful, marvelous
that you should care.
In 3 weeks, then, eh?
Yes, Ted, I am.
Well, you don't seem very happy about it.
No, Ted, I'm not.
No, I don't think
it's
so.
It's the thought of Mrs. Glum and Ron that's making me depressed.
Leaving them behind, eh?
No, Ted, they're coming with me.
Oh.
That's the trouble. Mrs. Yeah. Glum insisted. So I had to spend all my beer money on the tickets.
Oh, traveling first class. Yeah.
I don't like that. And anyway, to add to my troubles, I can't sell the flipping furniture.
Oh.
I thought I had it sewn up, but fate's clammy hand in the shape of Ron managed to scotch that.
Oh, Ron. The thought of you and Mrs. Glum going to Australia with your father. It's been quite a shock. Shall miss you all those thousands of miles away. Ron, will you write to me?
No, Eth.
Ron, why ever not?
I've lost me ballpoint.
Ron, how did you manage to do that?
It must have fallen out of my pocket when I was standing on my head.
Well, why were you standing on your head?
I was practicing for Australia. You see, they're on the other side of the globe to us, Eph. Everything's the other way round. When it's day here, it's night there. When it's winter here, it's summer there. I'm going to be a big success in Australia.
What makes you think so?
Well, I'm stupid here. I'll miss you, Eph.
Oh, and I'll miss you, Ron. Ron, will you give me something to remember you by?
All right, Eph.
Oh, no, Ron, I don't mean that. Oh, no,
yeah,
Ron.
Just a kiss.
No, you've unpopped my bead.
Hello, hello, hello. Go easy on that sofa. I don't want you damaging any of the valuable antiques with which this house is so liberally bestrewed.
What do you mean, Mr. Glum?
I'm flogging all this rubbish. As a matter of fact, the man's coming round shortly to make me an offer.
Well, there's nothing here that's worth anything.
What about this carpet? Go on, Ron. Tell me that this carpet's not worth anything.
All right, this carpet's not worth anything.
That, my boy, is a genuine Persian carpet.
Only 2 foot long.
All right, but the Persians live in smaller houses than what we do. How can I help that?
Well, is it really genuine Persian?
Well, of course it's genuine. If it ain't, I got done out of 400 tanner. Well, that carpet ought to fetch something, and then we got that bit of Wedgwood pottery.
Oh, Mr. Glum, that isn't Wedgwood.
Oh, yes, it is. Well, we use it to wedge open the back door, don't we? All in all, the whole lot should fetch a tidy sum. Who knows, we might get to 35, 36, 37.
Maybe even £2, Dad.
Yes, Mr. Glum, it's not worth a penny more.
Maybe, but I'm going to get more.
How?
Well, you two are going to help me out. Now, when the man comes, and he'll be here soon, you and Ed pose as me and your mother. You offer to sell him the stuff, and then I come in as a rival dealer. I work the bidding up, and then I withdraw, leaving him holding the bag and a lot of moth-eaten furniture.
Mr. Glum, that's not ethical.
It may not be ethical, but it's pargamical. Now, listen here. You want your darling Ron to have a good start out in the antipodes? Then you'll have to do your best to help me sell this furniture.
Mr. Glum.
Thank you, Eph. And when you come to visit me, you can have first ride on my kangaroo.
That's him at the door now. Now, listen, don't forget, Ron. You're Mr. and Mrs. Glum, and I'm a rival dealer what's come to buy the furniture. Now, you let him in, and I'll nip out the back.
Coming.
Oh, good evening. You Mr. and Mrs. Glum?
No, I'm just Mr. Glum.
I got your phone message. I believe you have some valuable antiques to sell.
Oh, yes, that's right. Won't you come in?
Yes,
this is our lounge.
Our lounge.
Oh, this has got to go, I'm afraid. Isn't it lovely?
Well, I don't know. It's rather dark in here. I'm not quite sure if it's my type of...
I wonder who on earth that could be.
I expect it's that rival dealer that's come to buy the furniture.
Oh, good evening. I'm a rival dealer what's come to buy the furniture.
Hello, Dad.
Dad.
Dad. Well, that's what I'm known as in the trade, you know. Everybody knows old Dad Chippendale. You may have heard of my family.
Yes, indeed, I have. This is quite an honor.
No.
Look, there's one dealer to another, the furniture here. You
know. Quiet! Don't speak. Let me drink it in. Oh, what a veritable Aladdin's cave. I hope I'm not too late. You haven't... You haven't bought it all at a price beyond my means.
Well, no, I don't.
That carpet, it must have cost you a king's ransom, sir.
No, it was 4 and a tenner, Dad.
Well, you've got a good eye for a bargain. It must be worth 20 times, eh?
£4.10.
It's yours! You got in there quick, didn't you, mate? Told you. I won't let you beat me to it on that sofa, oh no.
Well, what is so special about that old Victorian sofa, then?
Tell him, Mr. Glump.
Yes,
I'm... Tell him it's only fair he should know about that old Victorian sofa.
Yes, yes. Well, it's an old Victorian sofa.
Yes.
That's old, isn't
it? I might elaborate, if I may. It belonged to the old queen herself.
Yes,
that's
right.
Prince Albert gave it to her as a present.
Oh,
look,
really?
look what's carved on the woodwork.
Yeah. Oh, that's nothing. It just says Ron loves it.
No, it don't. No. Wait a minute, that's the R-O-N loves E-R-H.
Oh, and what does that mean?
A right honourable noble loves her royal highness. Prince Albert hadn't properly grasped the language when he'd done that, you see. Why don't you try it, sir? Why don't you go sit down on it, mate?
All right. Yes, I will.
Of course, this isn't just a sofa. You're sitting on a slice of history, isn't he, Mr. Glump?
No, he's sitting on a slice of bread and jam. I was having it.
Oh, great.
Here, let me prize it off.
Very uncomfortable sofa.
Ah, now, that's what Queen Victoria always used to be saying.
Oh, well, you're sitting on the bit where the spring pokes through.
Yes,
I am.
I know.
That was the very spring what led to the Queen to say we are not amused. And she was entitled not to be.
Look at all these stains.
Oh, there's an explanation for those, isn't there, Dad?
Oh, yes. Every stain tells a story. Yes.
But this one's a cocoa stain.
Yes, well, of course, it's quite clearly cocoa. Yes, of course, that happened one afternoon when Prince Albert was taking a dish of cocoa with Disraeli. Disraeli let drop in conversation what Gladstone said in 1860, and the prince was so shook up he spluttered his cocoa all over the uncut maquette, you see.
Oh. Well, there's another stain here.
Gravy.
And another one.
Custard.
And this one?
Brown ale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Victorian era was one of great prosperity, you see.
Well, of course you could always have it cleaned.
What? I wouldn't entertain it. And scrub out history. Oh, no. I'll take it as it stands.
Hold on. I was here first.
Oh, all right, then. We'll have an auction between ourselves.
Oh, yes.
Now, I'll start my bidding. £5.
£10.
£15.
£20.
Oh. You keep out of this.
Oh.
£25.
£27.
£30, and even if I paid more, if I paid 35, I'd be sure of a bargain.
Going.
Gone, sold to Dad for £35.
Well, I was going to say I'd raise it to 40, but never mind. I know when I'm finished. Oh, I'm Peter. It's yours, Mr. Chippendale. Goodbye, sir. Goodbye.
Funny voice.
Well done, Dad. You showed him a thing or two. Dad?
Ronnie.
Yes, Dad?
Come over here to your dear old dad.
Righto, Dad.
You were supposed to knock the stuff down to him, not to me.
Oh, was I?
Yes, look, like this. Go in. Go in.
Oh, Mr. Glover, don't hit him. Not with that alabaster figurine.
Gone! Please,
Dad, I didn't know.
Find the sofa. Oh, knock your head in.
And the BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved are Professor Jimmy Edwards, Dick Bentley, and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Polka Dots. Eric Merriman and Danny Took wrote the script. Your announcer was Douglas Smith, and the show is produced by Charles Chilton.